Anybody there?
Good evening.
Good evening.
This is Dave Meyer. Who do I have on the call with me so far?
Carol Jordan.
Elizabeth Revellis.
Hello, Carol. Hello, Elizabeth. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing great. I was getting ready to answer Carol.
Oh, I'm doing great, too, so that's okay.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. It's here it is, a day after a holiday, and we're back at work, right?
Right.
There you go.
Hi, who just joined us?
Hi, Ellen just joined.
Hello, Ellen. Good to have you here.
Hi. Is this Dave?
This is indeed Dave.
Well, nice to meet you on the phone.
Nice to meet you as well. You're local here in Denver, sounds like, right?
I'm from Boulder.
You're from Boulder. Welcome.
Yeah.
Welcome.
Well, and you're from Larkspur.
The other side of the world from where Boulder is, feels like.
Yeah, that's for sure. That is for sure. Who else is here with us?
My name is Carol. I'm from Alberta, Canada.
Hi, Carol. Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too.
Hi, my name is, this is Liz Revellis. I'm from El Paso, Texas. Hi, Liz.
So we got a couple of people going to be joining us here this evening. So I'm just curious as to what got you guys interested in taking a DISC class?
I'm happy to start this. Oh, go ahead, Carol. Go ahead, Carol.
It doesn't matter. I don't care. I'm taking this CTA course with Dave Kruger, and I had signed up for this actually before that. This one and another sub-course. Now is time, although I've been going for about 6 weeks with Dave Kruger.
Dave Kruger is an outstanding instructor. There's a little bit of irony here in that Dave, of course, is a CTA graduate, as I am as well. I happen to know that Dave has been certified since 2002 because he and I were in the same class together.
Oh wow.
That point in time, there were 12 women and 2 guys, both named Dave.
Wow.
The 2 guys are both back as instructors for CTA, so I find irony in that.
That's pretty funny. There's only one male in our class, and his name is Dave as well. Crazy.
And sadly, the web name Coach Dave has been gone for years. You can't get that. But hi, who else just joined us?
Hi, this is Melena Yang.
Hi, Melena. How are you doing this evening?
Good. How are you?
Doing great. This is Dave Meyer, by the way. I'll be your instructor for the next 6 weeks on this.
Thank you.
And who else joined us?
Hey, David. It's Chris Clemens. How's it going?
Well, good, Chris. Long time no here. How you been doing?
Good. Good. Really, really good lately. And, my business is going well, and sign up clients at a pretty rapid pace right now, which I'm excited about. And kind of getting more into the career coaching end of things and looking forward to learning more about your DISC assessment and how I can utilize that.
Very good. Yeah, so just kind of curious as to why you chose – I know why Chris chose to take a DISC class now. Why did the others choose to take a DISC class? What was your thought process there? Anybody?
This is Carol again. For me, it was I want to know as much as I can and understand myself as well as my clients and whatever and however I can best do that. And this seemed like an assessment tool that would be incredible for, a huge shortcut. Like it would take you forever to figure out all the information you're going to get in a very short time here.
That really is true. DISC is a great tool for understanding both yourself and your tendencies as a coach, as well as your client, what kind of things they might look for. So, Carol, that's an excellent answer. Who else just joined us?
Sayudu Maman.
Sayudu, is that how you say it?
Yes, that's accurate.
Where are you from, Sayudu?
Nigeria.
Nigeria. Are you calling in from Nigeria now?
No. I live in New Jersey.
Oh, okay. It's like 4 o'clock in the morning in Nigeria, so.
Yeah.
It's good to have you here.
Thank you.
Who else has a reason as to why they took this course?
Hi, this is Ellen. I was a CTA graduate I took my course in 2009, I believe, in 2010 with Crystal and Ryan. And
yeah, and
I don't know if she's still with the program, but she was fantastic. And been building my coaching practice since then and have been lucky enough to work with a team of execs. And a couple of years ago, an outside contractor came in and used the DISC program with them, and I got to be involved with that. I was just fascinated. And so I've been looking for really it ever since. And so when it came up clearly with CTA, which I follow, I was all in, and I'm just thrilled.
Glad to hear that, Alan. You're going to hear a lot more about that in the next few minutes. We'll talk about DISC and how you can use it that way. And the reason to get certified here is really important as well. Not because you can sit and say, well, I'm DISC certified, but because people who aren't really mess things up with DISC and create lots of problems. So DISC is a tool, when used properly, is phenomenal. When used poorly, it is a can be a challenging tool for organizations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Good.
Cool. Yeah. Neat. Awesome. I'm excited.
Good. One more person want to tell us why they decided to take a DISC course?
Hey, Dave, it's Liz. In my company, I'm in the training organization, and I was introduced to DISC a very long time ago. And like I guess it was Ellen that was saying, you just get very fascinated with the whole idea around it, how it works. And we use DISC a lot in our organization to help, again, with the communications with all of our employees. But, you know, for me, it's really just being able to understand how to use it now with my clients and how it impacts me, and my profile impacts me now as a coach as well, and how I have to start to differentiate all those things as to how I use it at work, and now I'm kind of how I apply it in my practice now.
Very good. So we're going to learn a lot about this over the next 6 weeks. It's going to be a very, very busy 6 weeks. I want to cover a few administrative things before we get into some detail here. And that is, you guys, hopefully you guys all now have the reading material, the DISC coaching catalyst.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry you guys
yes.
didn't get that sooner. It was supposed to send out to you guys when you signed up for the class. I'm sorry I didn't get sent out to you sooner, but you should all have it now. The syllabus sent to you guys yesterday or today, when you signed up for it, tells you what to read each week and how to prepare yourself for the class. Because the more discussion we have, the better it's going to be. Logistically, this class is recorded, and each week when class comes to an end, I'm going to post the recording to a Dropbox account. Do you guys all know what Dropbox is?
No.
Yeah.
Okay. I should have said, they might not know what Dropbox is. Okay. So Dropbox is a web tool that allows me, for example, to post a big file and allows you to go inside and just be able to download it for your own purposes. And it's very secure. It'll be tied back to your email address. You don't have to have a Dropbox account to be able to get the files I'm going to put out there for you. You have to have an invitation from me, which I will send to you guys this evening. You'll have each week, you'll have the recording out there, as well as you'll have the slides for the next session. I'll post them up there as well. You can download them and look at them in advance of the class itself. if anybody has a problem with that after class gets over, they don't know how to do something like that, just drop me a note or give me a call. I'll be happy to walk you through it. But it's a very easy way for you to get files that are big in nature to you fast and easily. Okay?
Sounds good.
All right.
Sounds good.
Good. So just a little background on myself here. I mentioned guys before who were here on the call earlier. I've been CTA certified myself since 2002. And so it's been a long time I've been doing this. And DISC has been a mainstay of my coaching since about 2004 when I discovered the power of DISC and really the way it allowed me to get into organizations that I couldn't get into otherwise. I'm an executive coach myself, and I found that executives like things they can touch and feel and read. And DISC is an amazing tool to use that way. And I discovered, quite frankly, if I would meet the right person and give them a free sample report on themselves, it would lead to a lot more work both for that individual, but also oftentimes in the organization, where I could do workshops for groups of people and charge $4,000, $8,000, $10,000 for a workshop. So for a $35 investment, a $10,000 return made pretty good sense to me. I think it will for you as well. So you can use it individually. You can use it as groups. You can use it for business. You can use it for personal reasons, for communication, for relationships. A lot of power in this tool that we're going to uncover over the next 6 weeks. As we go on here and talk about these different things, if you have questions, please feel free to speak up. I'd be happy to show you guys, you know, tell you guys what I know and how you can use it. Okay?
Okay. I don't have any questions, but I'm getting a lot of background noise of someone doing dishes or something. I'm not sure quite what.
I'm not hearing background noise myself. Anybody else hearing background noise?
No.
No, I'm not. I'm not.
It may be a line problem with you, possibly, Carol. You want to try dial back in?
No, I can hear you over it. If I'm the only one hearing it, then don't worry about it. Just keep going.
Okay. Right. When class does come to an end in 6 weeks, there is a DISC certification exam that you can take and become DISC certified. It's not a hard exam. Everything we cover on the exams can be covered in the class or in the reading. But it really just basically says, yes, I understand the DISC concepts, and I can apply them to individuals and to the profiles we have available to us. All right. Have you guys all taken your own DISC workplace, everything DISC workplace assessment yet?
So, Dave, I have a question.
Yes.
Yeah. The exam, is there an additional cost for that?
No, there is not.
Oh. Okay.
The only additional cost, if you do fail the exam and want to retake it, then there's additional cost. Okay. But that's pretty rare.
Okay. And the exam is done how long after the class is done?
I mail it out to you the day the class ends. It's due back within 1 week.
Oh, okay.
Okay?
Okay.
Good. Other questions?
Dave, if we have to miss a class due maybe to business travel or something like that, do we just listen to the recording, make sure we can get all the assignment taken care of?
Yes, that's correct. There's no makeup class really for it, but the class is recorded, so just listen to it, do the reading. And again, if you guys have questions between class, you can reach me through my email address, which you guys all now have, or my phone number, which is also on the emails I sent to you guys. So don't be shy if you have questions. I'm here to help. Okay?
Cool.
Okay.
All right.
Great.
So let us talk about the history and background of DISC. So did you read about where DISC came from in your reading for today? What do you know about where DISC came from?
You mean by who started it?
Who started DISC?
Dr. William Moulton Marston.
Right. So he's the guy who created the theories that are used in the DISC material. So he wrote a book way back in 1928 called The Emotions of Normal People, and that's a very important word, normal people. And that created the baseline of the work that was used to actually create the assessment. So Dr. Marston didn't create the assessment, but the theories behind the assessment. Now, Dr. Marston was a phenomenal guy, but he's known for the work he did in this particular book. He's also known for two other things that are obscure, because they're not obscure, but things not associated with his name normally. So two things he created besides the theories for DISC, he created the tools we use for the lie detector.
Huh.
Yeah. So the lie detector works and determines the changes in emotions. That was his work that created that.
That's cool.
Wow. That is cool.
And he and his wife worked together back in the 1930s to create a very popular comic book superhero by the name of Wonder Woman.
Wow.
Yeah. So Dr. Marston and his wife both believed that women in general were tremendously underutilized and undervalued in society. So they created Wonder Woman as a way to help raise the value of women in society. So that will not be on the exam, but it's always fun to know about Dr. Marston.
Mm-hmm.
All right. So in reality, well, Dr. Marston's theories are used in the DISC material. This actually goes back deeper than that. It actually goes back to the time of Hippocrates. Oh, hi, who just joined us?
Oh, hi, this is Lisa. Sorry to be late.
Lisa DaCosta?
No, Lisa Monson.
Ah, okay. Got her a different name on the screen here. All right. Well, it's good to have you here, Lisa. I'm Dave Meyer, and I'm the instructor for the class here.
Great.
We just start talking about the history and background of DISC, and you'll find, by the way, the class will be recorded, so you'll be able to hear the earlier part when I send the access to the recording to you in a little while.
Perfect. Thank you.
Okay. All right. So as I mentioned, the theories actually go back way deeper than just Dr. Marston's book. They go back to the time of Hippocrates. What does Hippocrates create? Anybody else know?
The Hippocratic Oath. Isn't that where that came from?
Oath.
Yeah.
So he believed he had the four kind of concepts of DISC under the terms choleric, sanguine, phlegmatic, and melancholy. But the concepts have been living around since the time of Hippocrates, but Dr. Marston, of course, put them into the theory in the book that was used to create the assessment, and that's where we are here today. So let's kind of walk through Dr. Marston's theories before we get into the actual DISC theories themselves. So Dr. Marston viewed people in terms of how they encountered the environment around them. And he said that some people in this world look at the environment and see themselves as being more powerful than the environment around them. And some people saw themselves as being less powerful than the environment. So that created, if you will, the upper and lower boundaries of a graph. Likewise, he said, some people view the world as primarily a favorable place, a good place where good things happen, and you can be able to enjoy it, whereas others viewed things as being unfavorable. Environment is challenging. It's tough. You must be on guard against it. And that created his four-quadrant model, if you will, based on the environment. Now, I bring this up now because it does relate directly back to the work I'm going to be doing in DISC. And there are times when I'm talking to someone who I've met but never given a profile to before, and I have problems placing them in the DISC profile, and sometimes thinking back to his view of the environment helps me see what their style might be. And I can see that they're in control, they're in charge, there are more powerful things around them. So I know they're in the upper half of that model. And I can see that they're concerned about the world around them. They're taking care, they're taking guard. I can see that in them. Put them on the left-hand side of the model. So I can figure out people's style sometimes based on that. Concepts. It's a big static out there right now.
Yeah, that is weird going on right now.
Yeah. The rule of thumb on conference calls like this is that if there's a noise like that and you don't hear it, that means you're causing it. It may just be your line. But if you don't hear it, it may be you. And, again, you can dial off or dial back in. You can also use *6 on your phone to mute your line if you're in an area that has more noise right now. All right. So to take Dr. Marson's theories, that upper left-hand quadrant, people who are more powerful with an unfavorable environment, these people say things like, yeah, things are tough, but I can fix this. I can make this better. That upper right-hand side where more powerful, but it's favorable, people are enjoying life because things are really great and they have control over it. They like that. On the lower right-hand side, where it's favorable, but they're less powerful, their view of the world kind of is, everything's pretty good. I hope nothing goes wrong here, but right now everything's pretty good. But let's be careful. Let's be cautious. But it's good. The lower left-hand quadrant looks like, well, I'm less powerful than the environment, and things aren't good. So I got to protect myself here. How do I do that? How do I make sure that nothing bad happens to me? And that fundamental model is going to apply very directly to DISC. So let's flip forward now from Dr. Marson in 1938 to 1972. Anybody here recall 1972? You guys old enough to remember 1972?
Vaguely.
I do.
I was 7.
You were 7.
Yeah.
Oh, I had kids already. I definitely remember it.
Well, that was my senior year in high school. So it's been a few years. But life was different in 1972. For one thing, we didn't have all the laptop personal computers we have today. Computers, when they existed, were huge banks of machines that fill up an entire room to do simple computing. So you guys took the assessment yourselves, and you saw that you took it online, and when you were done, your results were instantaneous.
Mm.
And back in 1972, you filled out a paper chart. You mailed it in to people at the University of Minnesota, where they were working on this theory, and a month or so later, you got a report back. So researchers at the University of Minnesota actually created the DISC profile, and their view of that quadrant model a little different than what Marston had. They said people tend to be much more active or tend to be more thoughtful and reserved. People focus on tasks. Others focus on people. And that defined their four quadrant model. Now, when they did that, they used the assessment and that four quadrant model to create the assessment. And when it was completed, it actually came out with 3 different graphs on it. And they believe the graphs stood for, this is how you show yourself to the world. your mask, if you will. This is how you act under pressure. When things get tough, you revert to these kind of behaviors. And at a core, here's who you really are. So you'll still see the graphs in use quite a bit today. Now, you guys are all seeing the DISC Coaching Catalyst. I'm also right now writing a book about DISC and coaching in general, not tied to a particular product, but tied to DISC in general. And to do that, I had to really, I took 42 different DISC assessments. Wore me out.
Mm-hmm.
And most people are still using those graphs. The material for DISC has been public domain now for about 20 years. So there are a lot of DISC knockoffs or DISC material that has not been updated since material went public domain 20 years ago. So Wiley Publishing, that we use here for Everything DISC Workplace, traces its roots directly back to University of Minnesota. So they're the originators, if you will, of this profile. And they have PhDs on staff, and they have moved from the three graphs to what you saw in your profile, which is a circular view or a circumplex model with a single point on the circle and shading to talk to you about yourself even more. So when you see a Wiley-based DISC program, you notice two things about it. You can notice that circular model, obviously. You also notice that they spell DISC with a lowercase I. So when you see that out there in the world and you see a lowercase I, you'll know it's a Wiley Publishing type of assessment. If it's not got the lowercase I, it's some kind of a DISC knockoff from somebody else. Doesn't mean it's not valid. But it's based on the original theories that has not been updated for changes in our culture over the last 20 or 30 years.
Really,
you'll also see several assessments out there, things like animals and flowers and colors, and they're all DISC-based, but they're not from Wiley. They're based on the original concepts, not the more updated material. Comments, questions?
Lisa, I've got a question on whether you get into it all, how this is differentiated or complements some other assessments that are commonly used by organizations, obviously Myers-Briggs or emotional, social, intelligence competency. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not a great deal of discussion here in this class about that, but I'll just touch on it briefly in that, and this is a really important concept, that DISC is a behavioral tool. Whereas Myers-Briggs is a much more psychological tool.
Okay, got it.
And that behaviors are important because we can translate behaviors to an extent. We don't get deeply involved in the psyche. It's like the coaching. Talk about we dig deep into a person, down a few layers. Deeper than that gets into psychology and there some therapy. Same thing is true with DISC. Down a few layers
of really
behaviors,
helpful.
But not real deep.
Got it. That's really helpful. Thank you.
Good. All right. So let's talk about the DISC assessment itself. There are really two important things here to remember in terms of the DISC assessment, which is the online assessment portion that you guys took. And first thing is we used the Likert scale, and very important, use an adaptive testing technique. So the Likert scale is that interval measurement. It allows you to go from never to always or something in between, from strongly disagree to strongly agree. It makes it easier to score and to create averages and numbers than other assessments might do. That's why we kind of use the scale. And behind the scenes here, you don't see it, but let's face reality. Some people never use never or never use strongly agree, or never use strongly disagree, because of the extremeness of those answers. And behind the scenes, the system designed by Wiley identifies that propensity and adjusts for it in the scoring. Yeah. So it's very sophisticated, because some people just don't like those high-end or low-end answers. So the second part is the adaptive testing. This is also transparent to you. Adaptive testing really ensures clarity. How does it do that? It digs into any murky outcomes and actually changes the assessment based on your responses. So as you're responding to the assessment, if it identifies things in there that are inconsistent, it will change the questions it asks you or ask more questions to get clarification. And as someone taking the assessment, you'll never know that, but it does. So the Everything Disk assessments, there's a standard 78 questions, and then if there's murkiness beyond that, it adapts and asks more questions. Now, let's talk about Everything Disk in this class. I took an assessment called Everything Disk Workplace. They're actually a series of Everything Disk assessments, all based off the same initial responses, that you can get to look deeper into other parts of an individual. By that I mean beyond Everything Disk Workplace, which is where I always start with new clients. There's an Everything Disk Management Report, which talks about how you manage people, how you grow your people, how you give them direction. Likewise, there's Everything Disk Work of Leaders Report as well that talks about how you create your vision, how you manage that vision across the organization. So they're not covered in this class, but I'll send you copies of those things as we get near the end of class so you see for yourself what they look like and how you might be able to use them. So as we go through the assessment process, we're going to talk about D, I, S, and C, those four basic DISC components. There's also actually 12 different ED styles. And the assessment, when it's done online, doing that adaptive testing, it makes sure the responses are consistent across all 12 of your ED styles. And then identifies which of the ED styles then applies most to the respondent. It's a little confusing. I understand that. You'll hear more about that as we go on. Hopefully get some clarity around that as well. Questions so far? Okay. All right. So Dr. Marston would tell you that his theory is wonderful. It's great for breaking people down and identifying things. But he would tell you that all people are different. But in some key ways, they are predictably different. And as you begin to use DISC with different people, different organizations, one of the things you're going to hear is people are going to sit there and say, wait a minute, you can't give me a standard test like this and measure everything is about me and who I am and put me into a little box. That's just not right. We would say, yep, you're right, we can't. We're not going to try to. We're going to measure certain components of your behaviors and use those to extrapolate information about you, but we're not trying to figure out everything about you. So a key component to understand and be willing to discuss with your clients are the things that DISC does not measure. And that was in your reading. What kind of things do you know that DISC does not measure?
Intelligence.
Number one thing, intelligence. Yeah. And I ask people when they say, well, you know, you're trying to get a thing in this little box here, and, that's just not me. But yeah, it doesn't measure everything. So how'd you do in the math section, by the way? What? How'd you do in the world history part? Oh, well, you don't oral history part. You know, we're not measuring your intelligence. What else don't we measure?
Motivators, motivation.
Internal motivation, we talk about some things that can motivate you, but motivation itself is one thing we don't get deeply into. What else?
Education.
Dedication.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Education.
Absolutely. If you graduate the sixth grade, that's great. Or you got a PhD, that's great. You guys could both have the same med styles.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Just people's experience that they bring to the table.
There you go. Yeah. So we talk about use it as a hiring tool. It's great for identifying your natural behaviors, how you like to respond to things, but your experiences, both personally and professionally, do not get measured. Anything else?
I think some people are just much more willing to learn more about themselves. So just the openness of that personal exploration. It doesn't measure that, but it might impact that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so if you're taking the assessment with a willing, open mind, you're going to get a better response. You'll see some fuzziness when people don't take the assessment properly. You'll see some talk about how that means a little later on in class. You'll know something's been going on there. Yeah, so you're willing to learn about yourself and adapt yourself, your emotional intelligence, your political beliefs, your sense of humor. There's a million things it doesn't measure. But the things it does measure, it measures really, really well. So have that in your back pocket when people start talking about, well, you know, what's it really do? Yeah. There's certain behaviors very thoroughly, but not everything. All right. So look at today at today's DISC model. You see you have a slide in front of you that shows the active on top, thoughtful on the bottom, questioning versus accepting. That questioning, we could say it's also a task orientation. Same kind of concept there. When it says accepting, you could say it's people orientation. When it says active, you could say fast-paced, aggressive, outgoing. From the bottom, thoughtful, can be reserved, introspective, quiet. But that's the concept of the DISC model that we use, again, based off Marston's original work, but now taken to a little different level. So in our model for today, that active area up on top and that questioning or task orientation area, those are your high Ds. And that D in the DISC model might stand for driver, might stand for direct, decisive, domineering. Those people are primarily results-oriented. They want to get to the bottom line, and they want to get there quickly. The upper right-hand quadrant, where they're active, and then accepting or people orientation, those are commonly, that's the I category, stands for influencer or interactive, interested in people. These folks are more outgoing, more fun, more bubbly, and they're pretty easy to spot. That lower right-hand quadrant, where people are accepting but thoughtful or reserved, that's the S quadrant, and that stands for steady or stable or secure. I call those folks the salt of the earth. They're nice, genuine people, quiet, introspective, thoughtful, but nice. That lower left-hand quadrant, where they're, again, thoughtful or reserved, but more question and task oriented. That's the C category, and that stands for conscientious, compliant, control. They tend to be detail oriented. They tend to be rule followers. It's kind of funny when you do this in public, and I do a lot of it in front of groups. If you're putting that category out there, and you try to spell conscientious,
mm-hmm.
and you spell it wrong, and they're going to point it out to you. They'll tell you, no, you misspelled conscientious. And the fact that they have to tell you is part of their behaviors. They have to tell you you made a mistake. So that's, you know, that's a two-minute overview of what DISC is about. We're going to spend a lot more time on these, breaking them down over the next few weeks here together. We're going to spend time on the D and the I styles next week, followed by the S and the C the week after. And then we're going to dig into style combinations. And this is a kind of a preview concept. People who administer DISC but don't really understand it, they get as far as D, I, S, and C, and that's kind of where they stop. What we're going to do here, and especially in weeks 4, 5, and then some again in 6, is focus on the style combinations, how people are not just one style, but they're a combination of styles. And I'll just let you guys know that over the last 15 years or so, I have made a ton of money, when people have brought in DISC into the organization with somebody who did not understand beyond D, I, S, and C. And they were all screwed up, and they called me and said, Dave, we're all messed up. I hear you're good at this. Come fix us. And I go inside and see they've only done D, I, S, and C, haven't gone beyond that, and therefore don't know enough to make themselves dangerous, and that's all. We'll cover those deeper areas here, especially in sessions 4 and 5. Questions, comments?
Interesting. This is interesting.
This is as intriguing as I thought it was going to be, but very confusing.
It's going to get very clear starting next week. There's a lot of here stuff to go through the first week. As you start looking about the D's and the I's and the S's and the C's, and you begin to get into the detail on them, it's going to get very clear to you why it's important and how it works. So after your two-minute introduction here, what do you think of the best of the four styles is? The best style of D, an I, an S, or a C? Don't laugh at me.
Well,
which one's
no
the best style?
Of course. There's no best.
Yeah, I wouldn't say there's any best. They're just all different.
They really are different. And it's mm-hmm. really kind of funny because each one has major strengths and major drawbacks. If you get into the business world, one of the things that I quickly discovered was that in the executive ranks, everybody wants to be a D.
Mm.
And I don't really know. I mean, I know why that is. It doesn't truly make sense. But they think, results orientation, getting things done. Yeah, that's me. That's what I want to be.
I think part of the problem is in companies, a lot of people, it's the bottom line that is a worry. Mm-hmm. Upper management, they only care about the bottom line. How you get there, they don't really care.
That's exactly correct. If you get focused only on that bottom line, that results orientation, that's where that D comes out.
Yes.
And there are really times that's appropriate, but there are also times when it's very much not appropriate. And I have experienced that in the personal area because I grew up in a company where my job was to fix broken areas, and they kept on moving around from place to place. And put me in different places and said, here, fix this, here, fix that. And for the most part, that meant for the first 120 days or so, I behaved as a high D. I focused on results and getting things done and getting things straightened out and getting things going in the right direction. But then you have to adapt. if that's all you do, people are going to get results. People are also going to get pretty upset with you because you come across really very strong and very aggressive and very demanding. And the simple reality is, if you're leading people, if you're the smartest person in your group, you probably have some hiring mistakes you need to work on. So you want to hire some smart people and then turn them loose. But if you behave like a D, you can't really do that. So leaders, and you'll see that in worker leaders profile things, need to adjust themselves based on where their organization is, what they need to accomplish. And looking at D, I, S, and C, saying to yourself, they all have different tools. What's the right tool for where I am right now? Should I be using the hammer to get results? Or should I be using the S and the bring stability to the organization? Make them feel comfortable. Make them feel warm. When you focus on the details because you're missing some details, and get that high C going in there. Or things going around pretty good now, and I want to make sure everybody's happy and engaged and having fun and bring out the I. Good. Good discussion.
Mm-hmm.
So, again, you have the four primary DISC styles, the DIS and C. And if you look at the – and you have a slide there that shows you the priorities of each style. So at the top of that particular graph, it shows you the action orientation. To the right goes enthusiasm, and collaboration, support, stability, accuracy, challenge, and results. So what you're going to notice is that some of these priorities are going to be shared. For example, the high S group primarily focuses on support, but they share collaboration as well as a priority with the high I's. They share stability as a priority with the high C's. The high D focuses primarily on results, but they share the action orientation as a priority with the high I's. And the challenging orientation of the high C. So this is the reason that Wiley Publishing moved to the circular model, because under the three graphs, it looked like these things were all distinctly different, the four styles. In reality, they blend from one to the next. And this shows that blending much more effectively than the three graphs did. Okay? So next page there, I'm showing you the everything DISC, again, priorities, and the next one is a graph that shows you the everything DISC, 12 everything DISC style. So you can see that graph is broken down, that pie chart broken down into 12 components, not just the four D, I, S, and C. So for the D, there's a DC orientation, a plain D orientation, and a DI orientation. Likewise, for the I, there is an ID, which is different than DI. We'll discover why that is in a few weeks here. There's the I, and there's the SI. I'm sorry, the IS. But within this category, there's also an SI, different than the IS, the S itself, and the SC. The CS, the C, and the CD. So when you get talking to people about DISC, you're always going to start with that DISC, but your ability to go beyond DISC to the 12 styles will separate you from the untrained, if you will, about how to use DISC, how to make it effective. Questions, comments about those two charts and how they relate? Okay. So when you took your own DISC assessment, you guys have those things handy someplace?
Yes.
Yep.
So if you look on page 3 of the assessment, you're going to find your dot.
Mm-hmm.
And, Carol, can I use you as an example here?
Absolutely.
All right. So I've got Carol's in front of me, and Carol's has a nice big black dot in the SI category. So if you find that on your disc chart we just had, and it's very far out, right next to the outer line, and very, very close to the IS. So that tells us a lot about who Carol is based on that dot. And if you read your own material, we'll cover some more depth in future weeks. The fact that that dot is very close to the outer edge means she shows these as very strong tendencies. Now, Carol is not the only SI in the group here. Who else is the SI?
Ellen.
Yeah. So Ellen's dot is also in that same area. Her dot is not quite as close to the edge as Carol's is. So Carol will be a little stronger in his behaviors than Ellen might be. Very similar, but just enough different that we have to recognize it. Now, Liz, what is your style?
I am an ID.
ID. So she's got that, the I characteristics, also the D as well. Her dot is also very strong to the outer edge. So she'll show these behaviors in a very strong way. And again, none of these are better than the others. They're all going to be different. And even inside where they're going to be the same, because this can only measure certain things, the people are still going to be different. We'll talk about that in future weeks as well. But look at where that dot is really very important, okay, because it really helps us identify where we are. Now, notice on there, if you look at your chart also, and look at page 5 instead of page 3, now you have your dot. Do you have some shading in the different categories? So you're going to see someone, so Carol Fair, who's an SI, has strong S, strong I, a little less I than S in the shading, but she also shows some D shading and some C shading. And again, those are going to vary by individual. And the details and commentary in the actual assessment are going to vary based on where that dot falls and how strong it is. So the assessment you're getting here is very, very personalized to you. There's one more thing here we're going to talk about in future weeks in more depth, but we'll just cover it now for the moment. And that has to do with that shading again on page 5. Because you'll find some people, not all, but some people, will have this normal kind of shading here. But they'll have additional shading as well that shows up as like a lined shading on their assessment. And what that means is those are primarily learned behaviors that they have been using probably for a very long time that go beyond their normal behavioral style to add a level of complexity or depth to their behavior. So as an example here, as with an SI behavioral style, Ellen or Carol are going to be very people-oriented, very collaborative, very easy to like and talk to, but they're not going to have a lot of detail orientation. They'll have some. They got some C there, but not a lot. But you'll find some people who have that SI style, but they'll have line shading into the C area, because they were taught over the years how important detail was. They learned it from their family, or maybe from their first job, but that orientation stuck with them. So they'll have that same friendliness and stability and collaborative attitude of the SI, but also very heavy detail orientation, which just adds a level of value to them possibly in the workplace.
So, David, if they're all solid, those aren't necessarily learned behaviors. Is that correct?
They are still learned, but they're consistent with the overall style.
Okay, gotcha.
The line shading is something that's a little different. I mentioned before the S, the I, and maybe some C behaviors. So think about that for a minute here. That person would have the outgoing behaviors of the I. They would have they would care about people around them, like the S. They'd have the activity of the I, but the detail orientation of the C, tendency to get results and make sure things are right. And when you have a S, an I, and a very heavy C like that, it sometimes, to people who aren't trained, looks like a D. Yeah, and so that's why that shading is important, because without it, you might sit there and say, well, this is not right. They're behaving like a D, and I can see them pushing for the results and getting things right, but they don't have much D. Yeah, it's the high activity level of the I, detail orientation of the C can resemble the D. But if you treat them like a D instead of a S-I-C, you miss the importance of stability and family and consistency there, and they're not going to be very happy. We'll cover that more. It'll all make sense in about 2 more weeks. I know today's a little overwhelming.
I definitely hope so.
That's what I'm going to say. Do you promise that?
Yeah, I promise that. You can see in your charts here, I gave a couple of examples of ones that have that line shading, right? So you can see the one there that shows the high I behavioral style with a very heavy C orientation. And I showed a C style in there that shows lines in both the D area and heavy into the I area. So understanding that that shading means that it's not the same as the normal dot behavior would be. Doesn't mean it's bad. It's learned. It's valuable. Used properly, it makes someone extremely valuable in an organization. But if you said to yourself, for example, here's a good example. I want somebody at my front desk who's happy and bubbly and outgoing because I want them, people that come in the front door to be really comfortable and friendly and feel like they're part when they come in the front door. So you hire someone with a high I and a high S behavioral style. Well, if they have that high C as well, they'll be outgoing and bubbly, but they'll say things like, clean off your shoes before you sit down. Yeah, and don't sit there. Sit over here instead. That's closer to where you're going to be going. So you want to make sure you have, I'm saying, the entire person, not just part of the person. And that's why those bar graphs there are going to be important. Okay?
Cool.
Okay.
I'm going to skip ahead here to the Johari window page. You guys all know what the Johari window is? Or say, who does not know what the Johari window is?
Just learned about it in the reading.
Me too.
Okay. Good. It's a really important tool both for DISC but also for coaching. I mean, this is a perfect model for coaching. Think about this Johari window. It says that there are things that you know about me and I know about me that allow us a common area, an arena, to communicate and talk about. You know it, and I know it. But as I sit here talking to you, there are some blind spots that I have, including maybe the fact that my knowledge of DISC may be overwhelming to some of you sometimes because it's so obvious to me. I may think it's obvious to you as well. That becomes a blind spot as I assume things that aren't really true. And you know that, but I don't see it. And that's my blind spot. And all of our clients are going to have blind spots. Likewise, there are things about me that I know are absolutely true, but you guys have no idea about me whatsoever. So we can't communicate about those things. We can't talk about those things. We can't bring them out in the open. And likewise, there is the potential, the unknown, things that neither you nor I know. Like tomorrow, what's going to happen? Tomorrow, win the lottery. Woohoo! You know, my life changes. You didn't know that. Neither did I. But as a coach, what you're looking to do with your clients is to help them see their blind spots as part of your coaching and move those things from the blind spot area into the arena and enlarge that arena. Likewise, as you ask them questions and they begin to talk to you about themselves, what's going on in their lives, that moves things from that mask area into the arena as well and expands that, allows for us to get deeper with our clients. That model is good for coaching. It's also good here with our DISC because as we understand our client's style, we're going to see their blind spots well before they do. And as we bring them to their attention through the assessment and make them aware of those things, how they can utilize those things effectively, that's going to increase the arena. And as they get comfortable with us doing this kind of work, again, they'll reveal to us things that they hadn't revealed otherwise that go beyond the assessment, and that will increase the arena. And as the arena increases, that's increasing our self-awareness. It makes our clients better. So I just encourage you guys to look at this model. Say, read about it. Read more about it online if you want to. It's a very effective tool. There's actually an assessment built around this as well. You can use it with clients, especially in groups, to see what people's blind spots are, help them work together more effectively. This is a good model to look at in terms of coaching overall.
Cool. All
right, questions, comments? I know it's like a fire hose in week one. We just got to go, there's all this stuff.
It's a good start. It's awesome.
Good. I think you're really going to enjoy it. Say, we'll get into the D and the I behavioral styles next week. I'll get the material out to you, again, through Dropbox within a couple of days here. You'll all get Dropbox notifications from me tonight that will have the recording on there. And, again, if you weren't on the call earlier, use Dropbox. You don't need a Dropbox account. You just have to be able to – I have to give you permission to use my account where I'm going to store the stuff for the class. And you'll be able to use that. You can download the audios. You can download the PowerPoints. And but I put the more things out there for you as well through class to be able to download those as well. Just a great way to get things to you quickly and easily about the challenges of email.
So will that be where we get our slides for next week now, or will you email them as well?
They'll be in the Dropbox account.
Just in the Dropbox account.
Yep, that's where you're going to find them. And I'll get them out there for you probably about the middle of the week. So by Wednesday or Thursday, they'll be out there for you for next week's class.
Perfect.
Okay?
Good.
Okay.
Righty.
Okay. Yay.
All right. Well, good. It's been great having you guys all here tonight. Look forward to talking to you guys all more next week. And if you have questions or things you want to know about that you don't see in the material, you've got my email, you've got my phone number. I'm here to help you. Okay?
Right on.
Fantastic. Thank you.
Okay, guys.
Thank you, Dave.
Thanks, Dave.
You're welcome.
All right. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Yeah. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.